Thanks for listening to High Education. I'm Amelia Day, lifetime educator and social justice activist, recording from my studio apartment. Today, we will be discussing the importance of media literacy in a democracy and how teachers can ensure they're helping their students guard against being manipulated or misinformed.
Why is media literacy important to a democracy?
I think we're all becoming aware of the importance of media literacy, especially when it comes to a democracy. A democracy needs an informed population, which is why Rosenblatt, my educational hero, has stated that a literate population is essential component of a democracy. Now that we live in the digital age, I think that we can move that away from just being literate to also having the ability to recognize the author's purpose, recognizing the validity of information and sources, and research skills are just as essential, in my opinion. I like the quote, "Everyone is entitled to their own opinion, but not to their own facts," by David Moynihan. I think that right now, as we can see with the way that our politicians are so in disagreement on every fundamental issue that is important to our lives today, it's really obvious that maybe they have different information, or maybe their philosophy is so different that they're unable to communicate effectively with one another. I think whenever we are living in an age where we can't trust anything that we read, and maybe people don't know how to begin finding sources they trust, it's so much easier to get paranoid. It's so much easier to get an us versus them mentality. But if we are able to really look at the information, I think that we might have differing opinions, but we would really understand what is important to focus on today as a nation and how to continue our democracy in a positive way. So Angie Miller, a librarian and author of There's So Much There, Helping Kids Conquer the Internet and Save Democracy, she said, "Every moment invested in teaching our students how to assess and dig into credible information is a moment invested in the future of a free press." We know that freedom of speech is super important to our country. It is in our Constitution. It is one of our founding ethical positions as a country. And I do believe that having free press or having free speech is so important. But on the flip side of that coin, there is the fact that misinformation becomes harder to combat whenever we cannot censor people. And we're seeing that with the way that people are reacting to social media is trying to do better at vetting information that is shared on their website. You see it in the way that people are getting frustrated with how things are being taken down or things are being blocked with a misinformation tag. So I think it's important to point out that those who are misinformed are actually more difficult to teach, according to Joseph Kane and Benjamin Bauer, the authors of Educating for Democracy in a Partisan Age, Confronting the Challenges of Motivated Reasoning and Misinformation. So they explain that the misinformed are confident that they're correct and resist factually correct information when presented to them in a debate or in class. I think back to when I was in middle school, whenever I think about this topic, I was sitting in my science class, and it was my least favorite class because of a lot of reasons, but mostly because the teacher's views were a little off. I mean, she was definitely older, and so I feel bad saying this, but she really shouldn't have been teaching any longer. She was out constantly because she kept hurting herself. And anyways, long story short, she was teaching us a lesson on the fact that global warming or climate change is not valid. She was basically telling us that it's a hoax, that the Earth warms by itself periodically, and then this is a natural occurrence. And so even in middle school, I could recognize that what she was teaching us was incorrect. And it made me angry because here she was in an authority position and she was giving misinformation to her students. Now, when I was in middle school, we were just now or just then really beginning to use the internet as an educational tool. Before then, we had computers, but we mostly used Word document and other things like that to help us with our school projects. But now, in the middle school years of my life, I was using the internet as a way to kind of teach myself what I thought was important to know. The fact that I was able to recognize misinformation being provided to me at that age was really good, but not necessarily everyone in the class was able to, which is what angered me. And moving that position to the eyes of our young students who are trying to do research for the first time on computers using the internet and other sources like that, I think it's very important to recognize the necessity of guarding them from misinformation. And as teachers, we only have so much ability to do this because they are on social media platforms and we cannot control what they see on there. So I really want to point out that social media does little to ensure that what they're hosting is valid. I learned in The Social Dilemma, which is a documentary which you can see on Netflix, that fake news is shared 6 times more often on Twitter than real news. And that's just because of the fact that these social media platforms and even our search engines are a tool that we use, but we are not paying to use this tool. So we have to think about their purpose. Why are they allowing fake news to be such a bad part of their community? A lot of them, like a lot of the CEOs, have spoken about the fact that they are trying to shield First Amendment rights, or that it's not their responsibility to ensure that everything that's posted on their website is factually correct. I mean, if you look at how much is shared on Facebook every single day, it can be rather daunting to think about having to go through and look at every single post to make sure that it's correct. So at some level, I don't blame them. But at another level, the fact that they're creating their money through the use of advertisements that are directly connected to fake news tells me that they don't care about the erosion of our democracy. And so we really need to be aware of where our young people are getting their information and how there's very little ensuring that what information they're exposed to is accurate or truthful. So I think we're all becoming more aware of this issue as a population through things like The Social Dilemma and other prominent figures speaking out about it. But I think it's important to state the difference in beliefs regarding factual knowledge and the fact that they aren't merely the product of ignorance, but the deliberate distribution of misinformation by some politicians, political organizations, and interest groups. Let's go back now to talking about global warming or climate change, and the fact that we have very interested parties such as Exxon and Shell who do not want us to stop using their products because that means they would no longer exist. They would no longer be making millions of dollars, billions of dollars off their product. And so what are they doing? Well, they are more than likely not going to spread information about the harm that their product creates on our climate. Maybe they'll even fight against that information being publicly announced. I mean, I think that we were just really becoming aware of the impact we were having early into my education, and I have very little optimism in our ability to change quickly enough to fight climate change if we do not educate our population on the biases of where we're getting our information. So like I was saying, these big oil companies are not going to tell us that their product is hurting us, and they're not going to encourage that information gets spread very quickly and easily. And that's just one company's interests. Now imagine all of the different politicians, all of the different companies, all of these different interest groups, and they are deliberately distributing misinformation for their end goals. Now, maybe they're more positive end goals than what I was doing with the oil companies, but even if they're positive, the fact that they're spreading misinformation tells me that they care more about a dollar amount than the impact they're having on human life. So I think it's really important to recognize the fact that this is being deliberately done, which means that we can deliberately and intentionally fight against it through our court systems, through our ability to protest. But I also want to point out that as educators, we have an opportunity here to go above and beyond what the Common Core standards or whatever standards your school is tied to, going above what they expect. Because, I mean, even Common Core recognizes that this is a problem and has standards directly tied to recognizing fake news. But I think that it should be started at a younger age, because Common Core doesn't require these type of standards until 9th and 10th grade. But you can teach even like first graders to recognize the manipulation that they are being shown or exposed to. And so if we can start building those critical thinking skills within our students' lives at a young age, they are less likely to be manipulated by our politicians, by the companies, by any individual who has an ulterior motive in sharing certain information. Now, I don't want to sound cynical. I do see that not every company and not every politician is doing this. So please don't think that I'm saying this blatantly, thinking every single person it has their own agenda, because I do see that there are people who really do go into politics for good reasons. I also want to point out that our beliefs and biases influence our ability to recognize truth, and it limits our ability to learn through exposure to information. So when our students hold beliefs that are counter to what we teach, then we lose our students. I remember this happening my sophomore year in a physics class, and somehow we got onto the topic of evolution. And really, the teacher was just trying to point out the fact that theories in science are not recognized as solid science as they should be. And it really triggered one of the students in my class who was from a deeply Christian background, and she had an argument with the teacher about the right of a school to teach evolution. We have to be aware of how our students' biases really influence their ability to learn. So I also want to point out that TV and internet use has coincided with dramatic increase in partisan polarization among both politicians and the electorate, according to Kane and Bauer. Now, what that means is that as TVs became our news source and as the internet became our news source, we have seen that our politicians are becoming polarized, which means that they are no longer willing to communicate and find solutions to common problems because they see each other more as enemies than as colleagues. And I also learned from the social dilemma that Google and other search engines guide exposure towards views and info that align with your views and interests. So it kind of creates a Google filter bubble. And this happens because of the way that search engines make money. They're highly motivated to keep your attention, keep you clicking and viewing ads. So they don't want to lose you by showing you the wrong things, quote unquote. So really, if you're using Google for all of your information, if you're using Facebook for all of your news, then you are getting a very different worldview than if you were to go to unbiased, uninterested parties. So that's why I think that media literacy is important to democracy and why it's important for educators to focus on this topic heavily, no matter if you're teaching kindergarten or if you're teaching graduate students.
How can teachers ensure they are assisting students in the process of becoming literate in media?
So in this segment, I'm going to be throwing a bunch of ideas at you about how you can assist students in the process of becoming literate in different medias. So if this is a lot of information that's new to you, it might seem like a lot. Whereas if this is a subject that you're really familiar with, you might glean one or two new ideas from this list. I will also be posting all of my resources and anything that I think is helpful for you on my website at highedpod.com. So I suggest going there if you're having a hard time following this part of the episode. I know that a lot of times I learn better when I'm reading and listening than if I'm just listening. So I really do encourage you to go to the website. It's something that is going to be updated as often as I can. So even going back to past episodes might be worthwhile if it was a topic that you want to learn more on. So my first point of advice is don't assume that just because your students are digital natives that they can research effectively without direct instruction. I know that a lot of times our older population of teachers assume that because our students have grown up with technology in their hands since basically birth, they are going to be completely proficient in using Google and using different websites. And they might be really good at navigating the website, but they don't have the critical thinking skills necessary to really analyze what they're reading, what they're seeing, to analyze whether it is reasonable to believe or not. So I believe that you should really focus on teaching authors' purpose and engage students in critical thinking activities where they must analyze biases and purposes of different forms of media. And like I said, this is a standard that is, I know it's in Texan's standards for first grade, and I know for a fact it's in Common Core standards for second grade, but I'm sure it's sprinkled in throughout every grade level. And I think that not only teaching authors' purpose and asking them to recognize the author's purpose, but really engaging them in that dialogue of why do we care about the author's purpose and why do we care whether or not our authors have a bias and how can we recognize it? So really modeling and explicitly teaching this is going to be essential if you want your students to become critical thinkers and to become people you think are worthy of voting. I also think that you should teach students about the manipulation that surrounds them. You can do this with kids as young as 5 with lessons on how commercials create desires for products that we may not have wanted before and the tactics that they use. And as students get older, you can transfer this knowledge of media tactics to politics. So, like, I did a lesson with my first graders. My first year of teaching that was my favorite lesson of the year, where I had them watch different commercials after pre-teaching all the different tactics and having them explore print media. I showed them the commercials and they were able to tell me what the directors did, how they used different things like colors and movement and famous people to really motivate the viewer to want that item, even if they didn't need it. And as the students get older, I think you could even teach about how viewers are encouraged to get their self-esteem or their self-worth based on the products that they have. And this isn't necessarily going to be something that you can change, but if you make students aware of it at least, then maybe they will recognize some of the manipulation that has occurred and change some of their buying practices. So I also encourage you to teach research skills through modeling, explicit instruction, and guided practice. So don't just teach it to them once and have them do one research project and think you're good for the year. You should start from the beginning of the school year to show students just small little lessons, not a big thing, but do it throughout the entire school year, modeling and having them do tiny little research things rather than one big project. And you should teach students how to use search terms effectively. A lot of times students get frustrated when they're trying to do research because they don't know what to type into the search bar and they don't always know how to change their words if what they're viewing is not what they needed. So teaching them how to use a thesaurus to really find key terms, teaching them how to use their background knowledge on a topic to research is going to be important. And then I also want you to teach them to research vertically and laterally. So a vertical study could reinforce false news, which is why you need to do it both ways. As an example, I am doing research currently on how to motivate reluctant readers, and I'm really focusing heavily on using reader's theater. But if I focus only on the benefits of reader's theater and I ignore any articles that say that it doesn't help or it hurts them, then I am looking vertically. Whereas if we look laterally, we can see both sides. And I think it's important to do that because an example of how vertical studies have hurt our population's knowledge is when Michael Brown was murdered by the police and a photo of Jota Kane, who was a murderer from Oregon, was shared a lot with the claim that it was Michael in the picture and that because of what was happening in that picture, he deserved to be murdered by the police. So just the very fact that anytime someone Googled Michael Brown's name and related to this picture, they were shown a picture of Jota Kane. And if they didn't think very hard or they didn't have knowledge that this was a false picture, then they had got a completely wrong picture of Michael Brown himself. And then they maybe didn't realize the importance of that event. And honestly, I think that if maybe we had done better at really focusing on that event, we wouldn't have seen the Black lives that have been lost since then. I also want you to compare and contrast articles as a class on the same topic, giving students background info on the authors to assist them in identifying biases. So you might give a profile of one author, have them read the article, give a profile of the other author, have them read the article. Compare what facts were used, compare what statements were used, compare what language was used, and think about the different messages that you're getting from each article. You can teach verifying skills, so how to ensure that what they're thinking is true is claimed in multiple sources. Give students a list of verified research and news sources, and I'm going to provide one on my website from Angie Miller. In the article that I talked about before, I encourage you to use this document or something similar when asking your students to do research and model the difference between a valid research option and a non-valid research option because there's a lot of misinformation on the internet. We should also teach students the differences between directional motivation and accuracy motivation. So, and the fact that when motivated by accuracy goals, individuals expend more cognitive effort on issue-related reasoning and attend to relevant info more carefully and process it more deeply. So when we are directionally motivated, we are motivated to find information that continues the direction of our understanding. But if we are accuracy motivation, we are motivated to learn information that we know is valid and correct. Learn things through directional motivation, we are more susceptible to when we biases, we're more susceptible to really looking for information that backs up what we already believe. I think you should also require students justify their opinions. They need to give factual reasons for their beliefs. It's one thing to say, like, I like the color blue. Well, you don't have to obviously back that up, but it's another thing to say that I think all females should be required to wear a blue shirt. Why? You should have to ask them to really give reasons why. Another thing to have your students do is prompt reflection on reasoning processes while reading. So ask them to write or discuss how they thought about what they were reading while they were reading. You can do a before, during, and after chart to really model how to do this before expecting them to do it. Encourage students to consider varied perspectives. So give articles maybe on a single event, but written from different witnesses' viewpoints. That's a really good way to show how our understanding of something is really impacted by the perspectives that we're receiving on that topic. And then also I want to say that I'm going to post a lot of different lesson plans that are available. There's tons out there, like from TED Ed and Teachers Pay Teachers, and there's lots of different books and different lesson ideas. So I encourage you to go to highedpod.com to look for that information. Also, if you are really wanting to talk about a topic, whether we've covered it on the show or not, I encourage you to contact me on the website or on social media. I'm on Facebook, I'm on Twitter, Instagram. Just contact me and let me know that you either have some expertise that you would lend to the show. I do ask that you have a valid interest in education. So whether you're a parent, an educator, an administrator, a policymaker, these are all people that I am looking for to host on my podcast. Please definitely contact me and I would love to host you. If you enjoyed what we talked about, be sure to like and subscribe to wherever you listen to podcasts. Proceeds from this episode will be donated to Save the Children. You can learn more about how you can support us and what we talked about today by visiting us at highedpod.com.